Okay, folks, we have a small audience tonight, a small group of selectmen. Technically, we're not going to open the selectmen meeting, but we're going to have your presentation, and we'll record it and pass it on to the people who aren't here, that need to be here.
Okay.
So I apologize for that layover from the holiday weekend, I'm afraid. If, for the purpose of the recording, if I could have folks go around the room and introduce themselves. Lydie, I'll start with you.
Okay. I'm Lydie Robbins. I'm the Executive Director. Hello, Bayana.
My name is Bill Swan. I live in the town of Chesterville. I'm the Vice President of the 30 Mile River Watershed Association.
I'm Lynn Kay of the summer camp. I have started my president of 30 Mile.
My name is Adrian Polke. I am the Director of the New Conservation Corps and Lake 30 Mile Watershed.
My name is Brent St. Clair, resident of Fayette.
I'm a legislator. Thank you. I'm Mark Robinson. I'm the town manager of the town of Fayette.
Joe Young, selectman.
Ken Morrison, selectman.
And missing are Barrett Graff, selectman, John Beekman, selectman, and Mary Wright, select person. With that, Lydie.
Okay.
Thank you for showing
Thank
that.
You. Thank you for being here.
doing
April
better than
April Fool's. Right?
Yeah. I know, we've got four of us here. So, first of all, should I turn the lights off or can you all respond?
It's quiet.
Not really, I'm interested. Can you see this up there? Would you like me to turn the lights
We're
off?
We're great.
Okay. Am I in your way? I mean, I feel a little electrical, more formal, but.
Nope, you're great. You're all set.
Okay. All right. So I know that I think everyone in this room was here, or not here, whatever that building is, the Grange Hall, last January, or a year ago January. So I will maybe skip through, or go a little more quickly through parts of my presentation, but I do have some new material I want to share with you, some of our accomplishments from 2012, and then we can talk about some of our plans for 2013. And there we go. Our mission is still preserving and protecting the land and the water quality in this region, the 30 Mile River watershed. We are going to be this year working on a strategic planning process. I don't expect us to change our mission too much, but we're going to be revisiting that and our goals and looking down the road to where we want to be in 5 or 10 years. So our first goal and one of the reasons that we formed and still one of our big priorities is protecting these waters against invasive aquatic plants. Here's a picture of Eurasian milfoil. You probably, by now, you've gotten all the information about the damage that invasive plants can do and how quickly they grow and spread and how they destroy habitat for fish and other native species, can cause extinction, can hurt tourism and recreation, therefore hurting the economy, lowering property values. So a big problem. So just this past year, in 2012, the Belgrade Lakes Association started a big effort to try to fight the variable milfoil that's now a great pond, a great meadow stream. So they launched their Stop Milfoil campaign to raise $500,000 in 3 years. And just in 2012, they removed over 50,000 gallons of variable milfoil. And I don't know how many people hours they had out there. Maybe you know that, though. But
well, it's a huge amount, but basically most of that was removed by a professional, dive team, with a dash boat. And they spent $250,000 last summer.
Bill, if you could explain what they physically are doing. Because I've heard about matting and what that does. And
they're doing a little bit of that, but basically what they're doing, and I know this because I'm from that area, and I'm on the BRCA, but they're basically pulling plants, and they suck them up through a tube that's on this boat, and they just remove huge amounts of this stuff. So it's 50,000 gallons. And just in the time that they were doing that work, you know, they were getting some grow back, okay? So they're going to go do the same thing again this year, all right? And they're hoping that maybe they can stop this, you know, from spreading. And this is a great pond in Belgrade. They don't know, they're hopeful, but they don't know for certain that they're going to be able to stop it. But last year, with 50,000 gallons removed and 250,000, they made some headway, but it was starting to come back. I mean, it grows fast once it gets going. It's unbelievable.
So the device they're using, it's like vacuuming the bottom of the pond.
Yeah, they have divers that pull it and stuff it into the pipe that then sucks it up. Okay, so the divers don't have to come up. They're down there. They're hand pulling, and these teams, like these guys, go all over New England like to do this. This is what they do for a living. They're professional divers, but it's expensive. Doing it, the volunteers that were doing this work, I mean, they work hard, but they didn't. They probably did maybe 1/10 of what the professional team could do. You know, just because of they're set up to do it, they can stay down for a long time. They're professional divers.
How do you dispose of that stuff?
They compost it. Yeah, they compost it. So it gets bagged up, you know, on the boat, and the boat gets the water out and the plants and filters it all out, and then it gets composted.
If we could just figure out a way to convince, you know, some foreign countries that this was good for you, it would be like a gold mine.
But well, I'm sort of thinking, you know, too bad we can't eat it, you know. I mean,
well, perfect that's what I'm saying. If we can sell it like we can sell Elvers, can you imagine?
Yeah.
And there is actually, if you're interested, there is a link to a video on our website where you can see it in action, not in the Belgrade, but in other parts of the state.
No, it's a neat plant because it spreads very rapidly. What's unique about it is that it doesn't have a seed yet to do all this. It also, plant fragments will root itself in, so what you end up is when you're inspecting boats and you see a blade of this stuff on there or a piece of that on a boat, they have a good chance of rooting somewhere in the lake and then spreading. So that is why it spreads fast, because it's just adapted to vegetative reproduction as well as floral seed reproduction.
And unfortunately, they found it in a couple other streams too, not just a Great Meadow stream. I'm not sure the names are, but that's the latest that I've heard. So so that we don't end up in their shoes, we're still putting a lot of effort into early interception to keeping the plants out, early detection, and education. So we've got three different parts of our invasive plant program. So the first line of defense are courtesy boat inspectors. And just the other day, talking to the executive director of CRCA, who's now a person who's all involved in that effort, he says he feels so much more strongly about the prevention effort, you know, the boat inspections than he ever did, because it's so much easier to prevent it. In 2012, we had 836 inspection hours. And here's a piece of Eurasia milfoil, a picture of it. Last summer on Androscoggin Lake, one of our inspectors did find some Eurasia milfoil on a boat that had come from Lake Champlain, which is full of all sorts of invasive species and lots of Eurasia milfoil. So the inspector found some dried up Eurasia milfoil and he sent it in, but that's when I saw it right away. It's pretty unmistakable if you know what you're looking for. So Androscoggin this year is certainly going, they're going to invest a lot more money in the courtesy boat inspection program and try to recruit a lot more invasive plant patrollers because it's possible. I mean, this boat actually went into Androscoggin with this Eurasian milfoil on it. The inspection happened on their way out. So you never know. If some of it got in there.
So at this point, officially, there hasn't been any Eurasian milfoil detected in the Androscoggin.
There are no invasive aquatic plants in any of the lakes that we know of in the 30-mile river watershed.
None in the 30-mile
river watershed.
That's
right.
Really wild.
Right.
But there have been some saves. There was a save on Arquipong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and that was 2010, I think. And it was a boat that had been over in the Belgrade area and picked up some variable milfoil. And
Would it be fair to say, or accurate to say, that Great Pond is the closest? In fact,
Solonsky's pretty close.
That's Solonsky?
Yeah, and the belief is, the theory is that the infestation in Great Pond most likely came from Solonsky. And they actually believe in this particular case, because the infestation was first found in a stream that flows into the lake, the belief is that it probably came from a small boat that was launched, not at the boat launch at Great Pond, but in the stream up above, and then, you know, and they were coming down to duck hunt or fish or whatever. Okay, so, you know, it came from Solonsky, had a fragment, got into that stream, all right, and then it got started in the stream, in Great Meadow Stream, which flows from North Pond to Great Pond across Route 225 in Rome.
It can be carried on a kayak or a canoe, so it doesn't have to be a boat.
A sandal.
Right, well, yeah. The thought was that this probably came from a duck hunter. So it could have been on a decoy, mm-hmm. You know, a decoy string or decoy weight, you know, paddle, an anchor, anything like that. So they were duck hunting. Messalonsky is a very popular place to duck hunt. Great Meadow Stream and North Bay there is another very popular place to duck hunt.
And duck hunters typically, when they're winding up their weights, start cleaning off weeds, you know.
Well, and the thing of it is that, yes, that's true. I mean, all of these things are, you know, that's part of the education thing, really, you know. So
unfortunately, with invasive plants really not far away from our lakes, and with, you know, it seems like each year, well, not each year, but every 2 years, there's another lake that gets added to the list. I mean, eventually, over time, we're going to get something. So that's where the invasive plant patrol effort comes in. And the idea with that is that you get trained volunteers out there who know what they're looking for and who can notice when something's different. And if you can catch early enough, before it gets to the point like it is on Great Pond and Great Meadow Stream, if you catch early enough, then you can contain it, or you may even eradicate it and be well organized and be able to respond to it really quickly. So just last year we started putting a lot more effort into that program as well, doing a lot more training of our own. We've all along worked with the Maine Volunteer Lake Monitoring Program, but last year started doing our own training workshops, and I helped to get a new team started on Pawtucket Lake. Spent a lot of time working with them, getting them trained, going out in the field with them, surveying their lake, which had never been surveyed before. So getting more people trained, getting more eyes out there on the water, getting more people knowing what to look for. 2012, we had 51 volunteers that did surveys on 7 lakes, and you add up all their volunteer time, it's over 300 hours of time. So it's a lot of volunteer work going into that. Our second goal has to do with pollution, and pollution from stormwater runoff and erosion. And here's a picture of a road that looks kind of like the roads through around here right now. Maybe a little more snow on the ground. But gravel roads are certainly a big source of phosphorus and erosion in the lakes around here. And then here's a picture of a lake in an algae bloom. Get too much phosphorus in there. And unfortunately, once you get to that point of a lake turning green and the algae bloom, it's really hard or maybe impossible to bring it back. So one of the programs that we had in 2012, our second year with it, is the Youth Conservation Corps. And we've got funding to run that program again in 2013. There are two pictures here from our 2010 crew as well, but the guys in the center, that was our crew from last year. We did 17 projects last year. Two of the projects are right here at the school, and a couple more were really close by on Echo Lake, and some on Parker, and the whole list is in that annual report that you have.
That picture there, they're all in Fayette except the bottom one. That's in Minnehaha. So the rest are all in Fayette.
Yes. I think you know how this program works, but just as a reminder, it's We provide labor free to landowners. They pay for the materials, so it's a great deal for them. And the idea is that we want to be minimizing erosion, doing projects, doing hand work to be able to cut down on erosion here.
What I'd like to do, like, with the audio recording of tonight's meeting, this will be going on the website as an audio file, along with your PowerPoint presentation, so people who would want to know more about the organization would be able to listen and thumb through your PowerPoint. So we can hopefully reach a wider audience. So when people call the office with questions or have questions as we lead up to budget and town meeting, we can send them that information.
Mm-hmm.
So don't feel like you're you know, being redundant.
Okay, great. And there's a lot of information on our website about the YCC program. And there's also a sign-up form if a landowner has an issue on their property and would like the services of our YCC, and they can put in a request for us to come take a look at it and maybe have a chance to do a project this year. If not this year, maybe next year. So there's a form online for all of that. There are a few pictures of some of the types of projects that we do. Again, it's all handwork. And as Adrian said, when he started, he's the director of the program. So here's a vegetated buffer on Minnehaha Lake, and that's one of the most common projects, one of the easiest projects to do, and one of the cheaper projects. Shoreline riprap, that's on Echo Lake there, that picture. Infiltration steps, open top culverts, driveway turnouts in a gravel road, rubber razors to help slow the flow of water down a driveway, drip line trenches, rain gardens, mulch. So there are quite a few different things that the projects of the YCC crew can do. And last year we also started doing something a little different. We worked with kids, with students, and then with some kids from Camp Vega as well. So Mount Vernon Elementary School, right here in Fayette Elementary School, and then Camp Vega. So quite a few kids, I think probably about 80 kids in all that we worked with over the spring and summer to do buffer projects, and then do some work on the trail here at the school. We hope to be able to do more of that over time. That's one of the areas that we'd like to develop, is doing more of these hands-on projects with kids. And another way that we work to address issues of polluted stormwater runoff is by performing watershed surveys. We did a watershed survey of Parker, Davin, and Tilton Pond back in 2011, and we wrapped up that survey in 2012. The idea of the survey is that you're out there in the field with trained volunteers and with technical leaders to document erosion sites. So you're identifying them, and you're documenting what the problems are, rating them as to how severe they are, and then recommending some solutions. So as I said, we wrapped up our Parker, Davin, Tilton Watershed Survey in 2012 with the report, which is available on our website. And then following that watershed survey, having all that information, we then applied for another grant from the DEP, another 319 non-point source pollution grant, and we got it. We got a grant award of over $62,000 to do work specifically on Parker Pond. And so the purpose of that grant is remediation, so focusing on trying to improve the water quality, protecting and improving the water quality in Parker Pond by fixing some of those erosion problems that we found during the survey. Here's a picture of the sites that were identified during the watershed survey. So you see, like, right here in the middle, all those yellow dots. Each yellow dot is a site where there's an erosion problem. And so you see the high concentration here, mostly in Fayette, I believe. Those are the four gravel roads, the Quimby Lane, Fellows Cove, Fellows Farm, and then Rocky Lane on David Pond. So all those that were developed in the 60s and 70s before shoreline zoning. So with our grant, we're going to focus a lot on those three roads that are on Parker. the project, which will happen over this year and next year, has four components to it. So one is working with the Parker Lakeshores Recreation Association, and that's the umbrella organization of the individual road associations that actually owns the roads and the access. So we're providing technical assistance to them to develop road management plans and then helping them implement their road management plans. So that's one chunk of the work that is going to be getting started really soon. We're going to be working some with Kennebec County Soil and Water Conservation District. They'll be helping with some of the technical assistance for that, and I'm sure Clyde will be involved as well. Another piece is to zero in on some of the really high impact sites that are bigger problems that aren't really fixable with our new conservation corps, but need more equipment, more loads of material and heavy equipment. So we've got a few road sites in Chesterville, one in Vienna, and then some boat launches over in the private boat launches over in that area. Yeah.
Well, just going back to the map with the various sites. Yeah. Are these sites that have been identified by 30 Mile, or are these sites where people have approached 30 Mile asking for assistance?
These are sites that were identified during the watershed
search. During the watershed.
Yes. So they were, I guess, so teams of volunteers and technical leaders went out. There were 10 teams of people that went out and covered the whole area, and then each team had their sites that they identified, and then back in the DEP, along with Adrian, went out to revisit them to make sure that it was well documented and took measurements as to how severe the problems were.
Of these various sites, the property owners, that have they been notified or involved in the process at all or afforded the opportunity to become involved?
Yes, they were notified last spring. So when the report was ready, every landowner that had a site was sent a letter explaining what was found on their property and what some of the recommendations were, letting them know about our YCC program. Yeah, we'll be doing a lot more outreach to these landowners as part of this next step.
Did we send letters out before they went out? I thought we did.
What's that?
Did we send a letter out before they went out to do the survey?
Oh, we did, yeah.
So we had to get permission from the landowner to go on it.
Back in 2011, And then everyone who participated in the survey, all the landowners who didn't have sites, they got a postcard letting them know that we didn't find anything and thanking them. So that went out last spring as well. So we have heard from some people that response to their letters, and we fixed a few of the issues through our YCC program last year. Did you have a question?
Yeah, my property is on one of them yellow dots. And I want to know how it was determined, since I had made it. I called, and from that letter, it said, call this number and opt out. And I told them I didn't want anybody on my property. How did my property get surveyed if I explicitly said nobody to trespass on my property?
Well, I would have to look back at our records. We have hundreds of landowners. I'd have to look back at our records to see if I couldn't tell you for sure that there is a yellow dot on your property.
I can tell. I don't know where my property is.
I'm quite sure if I remember right. I think Morrison, that area said no on the map. I don't think we went by there. I think if your dot is up there. A good looking dot, by the way. Not a bad looking dot. And how I got there is that when you called, probably, and asked me to come over and look at it, to do a YCC group, you asked for that. We went over, maybe the dot went on that way, but I'm not sure the dot on your house did. There's one right next to yours, I know that. It was on the survey. But a lot of land in your area.
According to that cove area.
Oh,
That whole bottom of the cove is my property. And there's dots all over it.
Well,
it's a scale, so you have to tell.
Yeah, I think it helps up probably, Ken, a little bit further. Because I know there's a lot of nodes on your property, Ken.
Yeah, but I can tell for sure from looking at the data if your property was surveyed. I mean, we were as careful as possible to to mark really clearly on all the maps that all the volunteers have to not go on property that was excluded. I was very, very careful about all of that. And so I could look and to be sure, but I think it's pretty safe to say if you ask to not have your property surveyed, then we didn't go on it. Okay, the third part, back up to that second piece of fixing those sites. So some of that work with the towns will involve working with the towns to come up with the matching funds. The grant is a matching grant for fixing these problems. It's about a 50-50 match usually. So we might be able to provide a town with $3,000 to fix some issues if they can come up with the other $3,000. And that $3,000 can be in, it doesn't have to just be in cash, it can be in labor, equipment, and all that. So that's the second part. The third part is our Youth Conservation Corps. So we're going to be doing a higher percentage of our projects this year and next year will be on Parker Pond, focusing in on those areas there. And then the fourth area will be doing a lot of education and outreach to the, in particular to the folks that live on those three roads and working with those three individual road associations. Okay, then the other part that ties in with that is our Camp Road Assistance Program. We've now got two people on our board. Clyde has another a person who can go out there and help, and then between the two of them, I don't know, they've got 100 years of experience or something. But they're great. They're both retired landscape architects, lots of technical expertise to help people with their gravel roads. So we provide that service for free and can help people form road associations and develop road maintenance plans. And Clyde and Rick Christensen, the other gentleman's name, will go out and walk the road with people to do a workshop. Okay, and then the third one, encouraging safe and environmentally friendly enjoyment of our lakes and ponds. And here's our star lake steward here, Mr. Adrian Fulte, who patrols 8 lakes in our Rambo, which hopefully will last another year. And he does a lot of education when he's out there on the water, providing a lake and a game warden service. He maintains some buoys to control heavy speed only buoys on Flying Pond, and then how many on David Pond are there? Two?
Five
on David Pond? Okay. And just generally being available to respond to complaints and requests as they arise, from disabled watercraft to people harassing wildlife to plant material on trailers. So we, this year, are going to be having our fifth annual paddle check. So last year, we had some weather problems, but we still did it just a day later. That trip goes from Minnehaha Lake down to Wayne Village, about 15 miles of paddling, and work with Kent Hill School, who provides free shuttle service so people can jump in at different points and then get a ride back to their vehicle. It's a fun trip. It's free. We ask for donations, but it's a free trip and a lot of fun. Alright. As far as the supporters that we have within the community, our coalition members, we have 6 towns, we've got 8 lake associations, and then we have 2 conservation organizations, the Kennebec Land Trust and the Belgrade Regional Conservation Alliance. Here is our 2012 income. So we do get the majority of our funding from grants. Last year it was 57% from grants, followed by individuals and businesses. And we are putting a lot more effort into that part of it, trying to recruit more individual donors. With coalition members at 19%, and then in-kind support that's donated services at 3%. And here, just for comparison, 2011, which I shared with you a year ago, and then 2012. So really similar numbers in terms of where our funding is coming from. So really close, but the grant totals are really similar those 2 years. And that's from different grants as well. It's not exactly the same grant source. So lots of money coming from outside the region. So while the coalition member number may be lower there, I can't stress enough how important it is to have that support from FAD, Intertown, and Lake Associations, because we wouldn't be able to get the grant funding if we didn't have that matching support. It's really a vital part of organization, how it works. So we're bringing a lot of that money outside the region, but they love to see that local support.
And last year, that represented 19% of your budget.
Yes. So, and here, and so say it's $3,000 contribution is 3.3% of our income, and say it makes up about 21% of the 30 Mile River watershed.
And what watershed?
Of the watershed, yeah. Big chunk.
How many square miles is the watershed,
Lady? About 200. Yeah. Okay, so on to our expenses in 2012. So expenses less than our income. We did receive some grants in 2012 that were for 2013 projects. So we did have a surplus there in 2012. So 84% of our expenses were for our programs, and then 9% in administration and 7% in fundraising. And just to break that down a little bit further so you can see how the programs fit in there. So our most expensive program is our Youth Conservation Corps, so that's 34% of our budget, followed by Christie Boat Inspection, that's 17%, the Watershed Survey last year at 12%, outreach after that was and the least expensive programs, the paddle check and the lake steward. So just to kind of wrap things up here, so thinking about what the town gets for the $3,000 contribution. So this is why, you know, all these coalition members can pool resources and you get more in the economies of scale, it's more efficient to get the work done. You can afford to have some paid services because everyone is chipping in and makes things more efficient. We provide training and coordination of lots of volunteers all across the watershed that wouldn't be involved in this work most likely otherwise. Lots of, again, coordination across a larger region. Public education, ultimately, I mean, all of this work is about protecting water quality, and protecting water quality certainly helps to protect land values in Fayette, protect the tax base, the local economy, and then we can't forget our quality of life and enjoyment there. So that was a little quick summary of 2012, a little bit of 2013. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you, four of you, I guess, who might have.
Thank you, Lady. It was a great presentation. I just wanted to make a comment regarding not only your presentation, but promotion material that you have put together here. Your annual report, I think, is all of it is excellent. And I just want to compliment you on the work that you've invested here. I think you've done an excellent job in terms of being able to articulate what the organization is about, what it's accomplished. Particularly, you know, when I look through this annual report, and I realize there's an audit that became a subject in the previous year, but a lot of what you've covered in the slideshow is in this document here, and I just think this is a nice summary, a summary of all the folks that contribute. When we think about Fayette's contribution toward the overall operation, although, you know, it's appreciated and it's significant, but the majority of the work is being paid by other sources. And we're 21% of the watershed. remarkable. I want to thank you and the members of the board for all your efforts. And we're thankful to have Adrian being a part of it. It's certainly helpful to have Fayette folks attached to what you guys are doing. But I did want to take the time out just to comment on your material. I think it's great.
Thank you.
And I want to say one thing. We did a lot of work on Pack of Farms. Scott Shotley, I don't want to forget that Rick, I got four projects, three projects on your farm.
Okay.
So we'll be doing them this summer. Then I got someone, Andrew Scoggin, that we're doing. So we got a lot of projects, but the main one is going to be Pack of Farms. But we got a lot of other stuff we got to do.
And that's primarily because we had to focus the 319 grant.
Right.
That's primarily why that's happening on Parker this summer.
So does that mean that Fayette is doing a lot poorer job taking care of the shoreline than the rest of the town?
Well, I think like as far as in Parker Pond, you know, that's, as I pointed out, that's where the development is. It's in Fayette. You know, there isn't as much development in Vianna and Mount Vernon, and Chesterville doesn't have as much, you know, shorefront on Parker Pond.
Thanks to the Parker David Lakeshore Development Association back in 1962.
Something, yeah. Blame Clyde.
Yeah.
Well, Clyde,
you can't blame Clyde for that.
No,
we didn't have a planning board then. We didn't have anything. We didn't have an ordinance
either. Oh, we did. You know, our wife you see, did 17 projects last year, and I think last year it was almost like starting over again for us. We didn't have funding in 2011, so we had to find projects. But we've already got a list of projects, and hopefully we'll get more coming in over the next few months, so we'll be really lined up and can be more efficient at getting more projects done this
year. So encourage anybody that might be interested to apply. We could have done more projects last year.
Yeah, we have rooms. We've got
reaching people who knew what we might be all about,
right,
and applying to get it done.
The only other thought that I had, given you've got a few years under your belt, getting testimonials from the folks that you served in the past so that people can see, even if it's just a one line.
We've got a couple of them.
Are they in here?
Yeah. And I paid them good money.
Yeah, we are getting some testimonials,
On that note, if you ever need, I can give you one because we did a project at my house. I was quite pleased with the work. So.
Was that last year? Last year, yeah.
I think the other thing that hasn't gotten brought up yet, but I don't know how much you've read about the issue down at Lake Auburn.
I've not.
You have not. Okay, go on the internet, and well, actually, you can probably forward a couple of articles. You still have those.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Auburn last summer had a pretty significant fish kill, and that whole situation has been studied, and they believe that the fish kill was as a result of an algae bloom in Lake Auburn, which significantly reduced the oxygen content in the deeper water and basically killed a lot of hope. And as you know, Lake Auburn is water supply,
right?
And so this is a really serious issue, and basically they're tracing that back to, you know, phosphorus loading in the lake as a result of erosion around the lake. So once you get that happening, just like with milfoil, it's hard to turn it around again. And so that's another thing that to keep in mind here. I mean, it would be, can you imagine the uproar if you were having thousands of toad or salmon or whatever floating to the top towards the end of the summer? I mean, people would go crazy.
They're applying to the state right now to use chemicals that have been tested this summer to make sure we don't have that algae bloom. So now we're dumping chemicals in the drinking water.
Right.
By which,
right.
Now you've got a hole.
Was it copper sulfate?
Yeah.
Which supposedly inhibits algae bloom, but this is
supply. You know, something that concerns me, and I've talked with Clyde about this a little bit, is, you know, it's like we've got a the doors are wide open on the boat ramps 24/7. And is there any way to limit the amount of, you know, the access? Not shut it off, but limit the access so that there's some way of monitoring besides just, you know, hoping that somebody is there when the boat comes and has it on it. Because there's so much time. I mean, 300 hours is a lot of hours. I mean, I'm not dissing that part of it, but when you look at the number of boat launches there are and the number of lakes that there are, you just can't monitor those on a 24/7 basis. I realize at midnight there's probably not many people going out there, but still, even just daylight hours.
Well, I will say that even on lakes like Messalonskee or others over in like the Bridgeton area, where there are lakes that are heavily infested with invasive plants, even limiting access on those lakes has been politically extremely difficult. So limiting access on lakes where there aren't invasive plants, that's not to say that it would never be possible, but at this point in time, I don't see it happening. I'm going to add anything
to that. No, I mean, yeah, there's two sides to every coin, and if you want to have a lot of people down here, you know, that would work.
Yes, and you look at the $500,000 a year that they're paying out in Belgrade, and it's like, come on, I mean...
I'm with you.
I'm not asking you to do it. I'm just asking for ideas.
The other idea is that the bass fishermen have tournaments all over the state. Now, 2010, I think it was, we had some in Anniscotti collect a couple of bass tournaments, or the mine to onto the boats, check them. And most of the bass tournaments, they're trained and they're educated. They check their own equipment before they go in because they know if they get that in there, they're not going to be able to fish there. And I'm saying 80% of them, probably 90%, of the bass fishermen on the pro circuit, you know, they go around, they are very good at checking their equipment. But you're going to get some bass fishermen, and that is not. So we try to do the bass fishing tournament.
Well, one thing that I'd like to suggest, because and we had a discussion about a 30-mile river district, Lakes District, and I don't know if that would be a benefit, but as an advocacy group, why not consider legislation that would provide a penalty for anyone with an aquatic structure, whether it's kayak, canoe, motorboat, decoy, that if they're caught introducing or have in possession, intertwined in their lines and motors and so forth, invasive species, that there'd be a financial penalty for that.
Well, there is, yeah.
But maybe more significant and more well-known.
$10,000.
Yeah, it's right here. So up to $2,500 for transporting any aquatic plant, $500 if you don't have a sticker. Mm. So it's $10,000 if...
Does it have $10,000 on there?
No, it doesn't have
$10,000.
Maybe I was wrong about $10,000. This is the new brochure this year, if you'd like to get a copy. So, I mean, there are penalties. And, you know, unfortunately, there aren't that many
so anglers
out there to...
People don't know.
No, they don't necessarily know that. See, those brochures right there, those are produced... I know about these because they're produced by DDP, but... IF&W, where I work, actually sends those out to all of our boat registration agents, and there's like about 65,000 of those out there. That's for hopefully just a few people will read them.
So how many people have gotten fined in the state of Maine?
For what?
For this.
For transporting? Mm-hmm. I believe zero.
Yeah. Last year, I did hear something at the mail file sometime, I think this year, about... someone actually being cited last year.
Okay, so maybe one. But there's been lots of people, you know, fined for not having a no-plus sticker that funds this program.
Right, but just imagine, you know, headline. Man gets sued or fined $2,500 for introducing a Eurasian milfoil to Androscoggin Lake.
Yep.
Okay? It's not going to take long before every John Doe fisherman will know he shouldn't have this stuff on his canoe or kayak or boat. because he doesn't want to get fined $2,500. That's what really gets the message home. From my perspective, because you're right, you can't watch all hours. And that's the only way. Self-policing and taking the personal responsibility is what will help very quickly protect the lakes. And I just think people need, somebody needs to be stung a few times. And it needs to be well promoted, unfortunately. I don't want to be the guy that hit 25.
Well, and part of the goal of the courtesy boat inspection program is education, because we know that we can't be out there all the time, but hopefully if you can educate that person who's launching their boat the next time when they go out and there's not anyone there, the goal is that they know how to do their inspection. That's part of why they changed the brochure this year, so they have this little tear-off part, whether it will work or not, but you know how to do your own inspection.
And maybe we can make it incumbent upon the clerks who issue the boat registrations to every voter. Part of the official duty of issuing that registration is handing them this and saying, look, you don't clean your boat, you're subject to this. Okay?
Do you have a badge?
Yeah.
No?
No.
I guess I put it in a different context. And I, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons on this issue of enforcing the law. Because it should be enforced. I agree with it because I put things in context. Where are you going to find $500,000 or $250,000 in your budget?
Right.
You pay off if this you won't, because you won't open in the area contaminated. One vote.
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
That's it. This is, you saw those little fuzzy little plants up there. Wherever those nodes are, you cut them off, okay, put them in the jar, and watch the little root sprout out there.
Well,
it goes quick.
If you, I don't know how many of you have actually gone down through this 30-mile, but like on the paddle track.
I haven't.
But there are some places, as we go through that I think about, and I think, we're talking long stretches of swamp, these type of streams. Hawkins Stream, the Pickle Pond.
Yeah.
I mean, if it ever got in there, end of discussion. There isn't enough money in the world to get it out of there. That's just such an aquatic...
You don't have to scare me anymore. Yeah. I mean, my question is, so what do we do about it? I mean, how do we take a more assertive or aggressive approach? I mean, besides, pouring a lot of money on it, I mean, not that I wouldn't support it, but the fact is, what can we do that would...
Well, I...
Versus the cost.
My thoughts on it is, I still believe that I'll ask Lady. Do we have boat launches throughout the 30-mile watershed right now that aren't staffed with either volunteer or paid inspector during even remotely busy times during the summer? Yes. So we're talking $7.50 or what, $8 an hour to staff those. I mean that's a very, very cheap, reasonable preventative measure.
So what's the budget that's needed for that?
I think we could tell you what would be needed to do it all on all Fayette launches if it's not already being done. And they are, because
we're really focusing on the weekend.
I'm worried about from the Lovejoy Dam north.
The other issue is that there are private access points. You know, the Park and Pond Association has been working to try to control some of that and providing access at some of the private launches when there are boat inspectors there. So educating some of those people and trying to limit access when the number of keys that are out there for those gated launches, but this year, I'm hoping that we can do more work with some of the private road associations, road associations and campgrounds, places like that, that have access points that aren't public launches. Yes.
Bill, is it the Warden Service responsible for doing any kind of enforcement here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And then, so the question would be, for example, the gentleman with at Chicago
that was cited.
Right, but some of that question is, you know, and you probably talk about this at the Milfoil Summit around, you know, the pros and cons of really hammering somebody on that end of it. Okay. You guys talk about that at all?
Over the years. Yeah, maybe not this last year exactly, but you know, what we do talk about is that the boat inspectors are not out there to report people, but they're really out there to try to win support for lake protection.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to convince people to care enough to inspect their own boats.
And
people get ticked off, and they're not going to want to ever inspect their boat. You know? So it is, we definitely talk about
so
that a lot.
My point is that, how much do you want it, this to be a policing effort versus an educational effort?
I fully think that the association or organization should be a voluntary, it should be a let's see what we can do type thing, not an enforcement agency.
Right.
I leave it to the wardens to do that, where they have the guns and they can protect themselves if somebody gets angry.
Right.
I'm worried about the Archivancas of the world, because they're the ones that don't care. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, where I want to do it, and you can't stop me. That's what I worry about. And they're the really dangerous people.
And I can't, maybe you have data on this, is that, you know, of the fines, of the people, of the fines that we have made, were those on actually Bunker's boat, or were those on just the average Joe citizen's boat that wasn't aware?
I don't know
that either, but I can tell you one thing, and you'll back this up, of the people riding around our lakes and, for example, violating headway speed laws, it's not just the Archibunkers of the world. It's the average Joe citizen. So, you know, some of that is, you know, it's not just the Archibunkers that are doing it.
But violating the head speed law isn't going to kill your lake.
No, but I'm just using that as an analogy.
So I guess I'd go back to the idea of when somebody picks up their boat registration, and just make it a requirement of the person issuing that registration, they must state, turn to this page, hand it to them, and state, this is what happens to you if you don't make sure your boat is clean. And I think that's one small step that's right there. Is they get the registration that they're paying for. They just accepted a responsibility, a personal responsibility to make sure their boat's clean.
She was so busy when I got it, she didn't show that to me.
Right. And I understand
that. That was in Lafayette?
No.
that's the excuse.
But that's the excuse that they're given.
Yeah.
But at least...
So what if you find something?
Yeah. Maybe a contract. You know, something that goes
to their registration for their boat.
Yeah.
They agreed on that registration.
Yeah.
Did she give you? Did she give you
a boat? You know, I made that up.
Oh.
we certainly
ask our registration agents to mm-hmm. give those brochures out until they're all gone. We send out as many as DEP prints. They always ask me, how many you print? I said, you print as many as you want, we'll send them all out there.
But Bill, you know, having worked with the clerks throughout the state with this sort of thing, is it an additional burden on them? Yes. But is there something that we could streamline to make it easier, like a signature idea, that, you know, it's a little contract. As a voter, here's your contract. You sign it. I will clean my boat. Whatever. And they get this. We keep that. You know, we have that as part of the licensing process.
They don't. The responsibility part is not that bad, and they get the easy part of the whole equation here. Mm-hmm. Because all you got to tell those people, anything vegetative stuck on that boat or a motor or any part of it, whether it's a tree leaf or whether it's a dandelion or what the hell is it, take it off. Don't ask any questions. Before Carter is doing the critters inspections, guys, they have the training and know whether it's milfoil or not. And then he, in turn, if he's suspicious, he ships it over to the volunteer lake to be on P people to get a verification. They have the blockers. They're the final word of this thing. And we have a system that takes care of that. But the average guy that's got the boat,
any idiot can figure out that he's got something green stuck on him. Get the goddamn stuff off there. That's it. You clean. But yeah. It's strictly clean, whether it's dandelion, it's whatever it is. And that's easy to do. There's no excuse for somebody to say they can't do that. They don't any have to worry about color blindness or anything. There's no excuse.
So looking forward, okay, we have town meeting June 15th. We'll have public hearings and public discussions about budget and that sort of thing. And, you know, this PowerPoint, this audio recording, this will be on the Town of Fayette's website for anyone who wants to listen, or if they don't have access to the internet, they can come and pick up a hard copy of your PowerPoint. And when it comes time to vote the same article that we've used for many years to transfer the excise tax that's collected on boat registrations to 30 Mile River Association, we'll have the discussion about why we do that and why this is important. And all of the information that you just provided us is what they're going to get, hopefully in advance of town meeting. But at town meeting, we'll try to encapsulate it in some statement. This year is just as difficult and more difficult than the previous year, thanks to the good governor's proposed biennium budget. So finding and keeping revenue sources is a challenge, as I'm sure you're aware. Is there anything, in addition to what you said tonight, that we could add as part of supporting 30 Mile River Association and that, you know, up to $3,000 that we collect in excise tax? I mean, obviously, you look at the financials and you look at the impact of what they're spending in Belgrade, why should you have to say anything else? You know, if it gets here, that threat could be our threat. You know, a dollar on the tax rate is the cash equivalent of $156,000. And they're spending $500,000. How many dollars do you want your tax rate to go up?
It's so obvious, isn't it?
Right. So it's so obvious that somehow
yeah, one person might not cause this problem, you know. One Joe Small out there making one incident, and you've got it. Once they got that chicken pox in that water, it's just a matter of time. That's
the thing that I see here is something you cannot control. You can try to protect it from happening, but the people that I've talked to in this whole thing is sooner or later it's going to happen. The lakes are going to get infested. No matter what kind of money you put into it, you're going to have it. So, and I sort of agree with that. It just takes that one person that's up in the beginning of Parker Pond or Flying Pond that puts in and it flushes down through the stream. At that point, it keeps going.
And it doesn't even have to be downstream, because once it's, the closer it is to any of these lakes, as people move from lake to lake,
right.
You know, it can go upstream just as good as it goes down, you know, because boats will move it.
Yeah.
The people will move it.
Well, and that's like I mentioned earlier, I think that's why we need to continue to train more and invasive plant controllers to get out there to catch it early. You know, and maybe in 20 years, we'll know a lot more about how to control these invasive plants. You know, we can hope. We
right.
can just keep it out long enough that...
Well, and the continuum of education, the outreach is... Because we've talked about registering boats. You've got the kayaks and the canoes and you don't have to, so
right.
Those people aren't even part of the equation in terms of going through the town.
Yeah. Our analogy is that the only thing that all of us can do is our best. You know, that's all we can do is our best. Maybe our best won't be good enough, but we can at least do our best. And that means as many volunteer hours as we can put out there, as many paid hours as we can put out there, with the hope that, you know, that one person we stop this year, you're right, maybe 10 years from now we won't stop it, but maybe we will. We don't know. But if we don't try, we certainly won't. If we were not trying, we would already have Milfoil, Parker Pond, and we would have it in Anishinaabeg. Those are two places we can rest quite well assured that it would take hold, you know, And so, and if they hadn't at least tried to stop it in Great Pond this last year, it would have been at a place where they could not have stopped it. It would have already grown well beyond any, now you'd be in the mowing the lake, which they do, you know, in other places. So that's kind of our thought is, let's just do everything we can. Maybe we'll be successful, maybe we won't, but at least when we step back there when we're 90, we can say, well, you know, we tried, you know.
So still, coming back to the issue, we need more money to do more paid inspections for more boat launches.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have suggestions on where we can find that money besides direct taxation? Can we form a watershed protection district that assesses funding for that? Can we assess a special fee on boats and canoes in the community? What options do we have as a community to do that?
On the taxation, I won't go there, but I know for a fact, I did some work on Anderscoggin last year, and on two of the properties, the owners came there, and they asked me what they could do to help the lake, and they wanted to take training for invasive plants. I told them to get in contact with Leidy, and there's four or five people just on the boat landing as we check. They want to do it there, and they come down in the summertime, they want to do the boat invasive plants and boat inspection. I said, fantastic. So you got one party, it's a one boat landing, a lot of boat landing in Scotland. This is on the Wayne side, and there's enough interest in that one organization. They're going to do their own training, and they're going to watch that boat ramp, plus check around that little lake, a little area of that lake. That's a big star. It's got all three. That's all volunteers.
And the other thing we've done is that, you know, we should have more members that are part of the Anderscoggin Lake Improvement Corporation, but that is what's funding. That's what's funding our boat inspection. And we've gone to, we've tripled what we're doing for paid boat inspections this summer, which is coming from Anderscoggin Lake ALIC Improvement Corporation, which is people around the lake, you know, contributing to be a member of the association and hopefully giving more than $20-$25. We'll get people that give several hundred. But that's where our funding is coming from, to increase our level of paid boat inspections, let alone volunteer boat inspections.
Well, the other thing is, too, that I look at these lakes and I look in the wintertime and see the ice fishing shacks out there. It reminds me of a whole segment of our society here that assumes no responsibility, any of these responsibilities whatsoever. It's been the Lake Association for all along. And it's been exclusively the Lake Association, traditionally, not none point source pollution, and everybody else carries the burden. And yet, there's a public waters out there. You and I own a piece of share of every damn lake, great pond in the state of Maine here. And yet, when it comes time to pony up, it's always a short term one that has to do the heavy lifting. Somehow we need to reach this group of people. We need them as a source of volunteers and put the commitment. Volunteer is more than just showing up and looking at a boat. It's a commitment to training hours, and we have good training apparatus in the state of Maine to provide all this at very low cost. You're not paying university main fees for any of this stuff. You are right down to the line with some good professional people, and it's very inexpensive. It's time consuming. It's a commitment. And this will work. There are people out there that don't live on the lake that would be very happy to get out there and do this stuff for somebody to reach them and get to them. And likewise, I think the people up there ice fishing, someday they're not going to pull a fish out of that ice hole. They're going to pull up some damn weeds. They're going to all wonder, what do we do wrong here? And there'll be a panic. And there's no lake there. And I think, again, you know, we need to get those people involved, too, here. I think some of the women, they knew the relationship here was going to happen. But someday they won't be pulling the fish out of that hole. And the fun's over.
Do you deal with friends of prophecy at all?
Well, yeah, we meet, and certainly our colleagues, and we talk with them. And
how they get their funding, and who they talk to, and
same way we do.
Yeah, it's pretty similar.
I know.
They have gotten more business support than we have over the years, and they have a lot more businesses that are part of that region. We're this year going to be investing more of our time, a lot of our board members' time, into trying to get more business support. But you know, we don't have the businesses of the Cavite, of the Augusta area. We don't have the wealth of the Belgrade area. So we have to.
We have trees.
Yeah. So it is more challenging, but we're really investing our time in trying to reach more people and get more donors, get more businesses, more individuals.
I talked to John Blue.
Yeah, I talked to them pretty often.
Another thought too is we had a speaker 30 Mile early on from the China Lake region, which really got into a very disastrous state. And what happened was, and they finally, came together to support, cleaning up the lake. But what they found was, all the property values around the lake had just plummeted, which means that everybody living in that community, all their tax rates went up. So it's not only affecting the people on the lake with shorefront property, but it's going to affect everybody in the community if the shorefront property deteriorates in value. So it doesn't make any difference whether you live on or nearby. It has an impact on everybody if the quality goes.
Are you involved? This is another little piece of the puzzle here, too. I think there's just a little hope here that this provision thing we're talking about, it's got to talk about a lot of loopholes in this thing, and why it fails at some point. It probably will. But we also have this rapid response phase, who we get into. You get involved down here with the hydrilla. I know you were down as a volunteer on your own time, by the way, and spent some time down there in Amherst Quarter Lake when we had that outbreak down there, that cove down there. And once they found it in that local area. And that's because they had good plant controllers, and they were timely. They didn't let it wait until it spread all over the place. That's what they emphasized the point of. And I think they kind of cleaned that up pretty much. Oh, is that still?
Well, it's well contained.
Huh?
It's well contained.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were lots of people all over the state trained who responded to that. And the BLMD and the DEP worked together to organize, with the Damisella Lake Association to organize that response. And then they, within a year, they had something like 175 trained volunteers on that lake who are going out and surveying the whole thing. It's not quite as many now, but still well over 100 invasive plant controllers that are trained.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that it does, it makes a difference when you can respond quickly and get things contained.
Do you feel confident or comfortable with the number of trained folks that we have in this water district, in this 30-mile?
No, we still have areas that haven't been surveyed. Yeah, we still need more.
So we don't know whether we have a problem or not.
Like Pickerel Pond, for instance, I do know of a volunteer who has unofficially surveyed it, but that hasn't been surveyed. A lot of Lovejoy Pond hasn't been surveyed. Parker's been looked at pretty well over the years, but not 100% of it, So yes, there's always more that we can do. I think we're doing well. If you look at our watershed compared to the rest of the state, I mean, we have pretty good teams of people, but we can get more volunteers for sure.
Volunteers seem to, I think, of all of the things to volunteer for, that's probably the most popular though, right? Is it, lady?
Yeah, it seems to be more popular than boat inspections. The people, I don't know, they can
They can do it on a nice day, And so that, I think there's a lot of potential to get a lot more volunteers into that piece of it. And so if you can detect it early because you've got all these volunteers out there, then you can kick in a rapid response thing, you can go crazy. You might have to raise the money, but, to eradicate it. So that's probably the biggest opportunity for a lot more volunteers that would be really helpful, because people do seem to like doing that.
Yeah, and really what if we could get everyone, I mean, along with all of the trained volunteers, if we could just get every landowner that owns property in the lake to just pay attention, if they see something that looks weird, like, that doesn't usually grow there, or look how much that's growing, that wasn't there last summer, and then let us know, and we could check it out. I mean, they don't have to be experts. We can just kind of, you know, build that awareness, too, is something that we're working on. So there's lots more of that we can continue to do. I feel like we're making good progress. You know, like I mentioned last year, the Catholic Lake now has a team of about 12 volunteers that have never done this before. There's never been a survey out there, and now they're all gung-ho and trained. And so we need more of that.
One of the odd things to me about that whole thing is Joe's talking about, you know, the idea of restriction into a lake, and yet, you know, the states go in and they improve access into lakes. We improved the access to Parker Pond last year. It's like two trains running at each other by doing it that way. But I'm definitely against restricting people access to the lake. I mean, and I think the state would too. I mean, obviously they would, because they're improving all the access. I mean, they feel that Parker Pond is a jewel at this point, where it's been turned.
That's interesting. On one hand, they, you know, you have the state developing access, improving access. If you build it, they will come. Yet we don't want them here if they're going to be bringing Eurasian milfoil.
And then you hear Peter Violet,
Biggie
from Chinbro saying, you know, find what you have in your community that's an asset that you can profit from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we obviously think, well, we've got the lakes, you know.
In the case of the park pond launch, I mean, that's a little different situation. That's actually owned by the town of Vienna.
Right.
And the town of Vienna, the citizens of Vienna were interested in some rudimentary amount of improvement of that launch. And that's what was done. You know, so that was a case where, I mean, that had nothing to do with the state.
Now, I know the state has looked at it.
Oh, sure.
Well, and the concern was that if something wasn't done to make it at least a little bit more accessible, then it might go to the other stream where we would have a big state launch. And so
right. It's
sort of like, you know, the compromise that maybe ultimately could keep more of the bigger boats out of the lake. Right?
Yeah, that was, I saw it before they did the work. It was pretty rough shape.
They can get onto that pond on any time they want, because our association charges $30. We open up our boat launch one weekend in the spring, or two weekends in the spring. We open it two weekends in the fall to pull out, and they get charged $30 to put in, because Vianna's was in such terrible shape that the bigger houseboats, or not, it was pontoons, and the bigger boats didn't dare go up to Vianna. So we charge them $30 a shot as our association has access fee to Parker.
On Quimby? Yeah, those are inspections and
right.
Stuff.
Sometimes. The Parker Pond Association organizes that.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I think the best deterrent that we have on Parker Pond is the rock itself from the boat. I was talking to a bass fisherman that went out there last year. And thought he was free and easy once he got out of the boat, opened it up and just nailed it and tore the bottom of the boat. Oops. That was you.
I hit it twice.
Yeah. Well, it's
boring there. That's right off the boat launch, too.
You know, when I say restrict, I'm not saying eliminate, but I am saying that there ought to be, you know,
during the hours of
food. Yeah, I mean, there ought to be some sort of responsibility there that requires people, but, you know, it's only open for certain hours or something.
That's tough. Dealing with it's like dealing with the ice fishermen who have you know, it's their God-given right to park on Echo Lake Road and shuttle across the lake and drill.
Yeah, but when we've got a $500,000 bill staring us in the face.
I understand.
You know, you're talking about something else. And, you know, pay me now or pay me later.
That's why I really think there needs to be punitive measures.
Well, the other thing we haven't talked about is we get a lot of the things closely to the Foothills Airport and the seaplanes. He does a lot of practice landings on the Amistad Lake.
Absolutely right.
Pilot, up, down, back up, yeah. And who knows what other lake they might have.
Yeah, we have how many planes, speaking of, how many planes do we have? So we've got two.
Like,
we have two on my
side. Two, we've got
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes up country a lot.
Yeah, we
have. I mean, it's all kind of the southern ones that we have to worry about more than the ones up north, don't we?
He probably goes all over.
I
know
him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I'd like just to bring back to what Bill said, we do our best.
Understood. Yeah. I'm just looking for ideas.
Yeah.
Well, I think the biggest thing right now is that there's still plenty of room for a lot more volunteers right within our own watershed, okay? And so that doesn't cost anybody anything. And that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, we know the town money is tight, you know, the state money is tight, you know, grant money isn't easy to get. I mean, we've been very lucky to get what we've got, but we know that that's not going to continue. We know it's unrealistic for us to raise that kind of money year after year after year for grants. So we're going out into the business world, you know, and things like that to try to supplement that. But my volunteers. You know, volunteers are especially asking to do something that's actually halfway fun to start with during good weather, during the summer. You don't have to survey a lake 20 times a year. You know, you survey it once or twice, you know, spring and fall, and you know what I mean? That's it's not a lot of work. So that's something we can really expand a lot.
Is it something you could set up a booth at the town meeting and try and get some of the youngsters that have come to a town meeting to sign up as volunteers? An informational booth. This is what we're looking for. This is why we're doing it. And, you know, hey, you're up here for vacation. Now you can spend the whole vacation on a lake or on different ponds. And is that something that would work? Or?
We certainly have, we've got a display, and we could be there if you think that would.
Well, I think last year Clive set up the display, and really there wasn't a lot of activity or questions about 30 Mile other than a few comments. But like I said, this year is going to be a little bit more of a challenge because of the way things are. So questions may be more.
We're going to get two levels of volunteers. We got some who can do a whole damn lake for you. We got 1,000 of them. We know what the LMP is doing this, and they're very, very committed, extremely committed people. And then you got the other group, not that committed, but will do some amount of volunteering. They're willing to give out maybe something. I've read this talk with people on the Crystal Lake at the meeting over there, at the round table, and it's really struck to me because these people came from all over the state here. These are our people who. Been doing for 30, 40 years, some of them 25 years, some of them 15 years. I mean, they really committed. And they're well trained, they're gung-ho. If you ever worry about who's going to replace them, my God, no, we're going to stop getting more people coming in here. This worried as we are. And what they've done at Crystal Lake down there, they come up with a scheme to see me working. They're thinking and saying, hey, we're not asking this much later. We're going to divvy up the shoreline of this lake. And you patrol the waters so many feet out there from this 2,000 foot statement or whatever it is on there. And that's your baby. And I'm going to do a plant patrol in any one. They go down to the next guy, he takes it. And they have these things all marked, whatever happens to them, even the landmarks, by some of those camps and so forth. And so they only got to maybe put in 2 hours or something. And they made a contribution instead of trying to do the whole lake for a whole day. And they come to me, that was kind of a creative thing, too, in some ways, because some people don't have the time. Trying to get these working stiffs, people who unfortunately are not retired, to do this, to get into this thing too, because they're the people who come on the weekend, do the ice fishing, enjoy the lake, and also use the boat ramps. so why not? Here's a chance for them now to get involved in this day and help protect it, because and with, so far it's always been hung up again back on the poor old shore camera that they are stuck with the whole damn thing. It's not quite fair. It's a very, very unfair balance here. And I think that there's a lot of ways, tricky things we can do here to organize this, and a little creativity. But we got to get the community involved. I don't know how, at this point, it can shove our way, and we can shove it back there, too, because I think it's a partnership here of action, not just, because we just can't go back on taxation all the time. Particularly when you're losing tax, you're revenue from another source and big gobs of it, and you got your own infrastructure you got to take care of with this town, and we got a lot invested in it, and who the Dickens wants to go with all that money we put into our roads, and they'd be walking backwards on that one. We should be at least treading or going forward. If we don't, we're going to be right back to where we started here 30 years ago. 50% of the roads are gravel.
I'm afraid you're right.
Yeah. And it's very easy for that to happen again. All the money we put into this thing is now gravel.
You have that thing here at the school. Pay that. That would be a good day to set up a little booth there, because you have predominantly youngsters here. Youngsters are usually made by young people, not us old farts. Then you get the younger people that are more likely to be, as in 20s and 30s.
They have
Fayette Central School Day.
The Fayette Family Fun Day that they have every mid-May.
Is it with the weekend?
It's a Saturday. I think it's the 15th of May.
That's a big problem in these little towns, is most of the people here are retired and they don't have... the energy or the desire.
I wonder if we had a supper and invited in a speaker to talk about the lakes. You may know somebody. I attended the Waters Utilities. Was it the water? No, it was just a few weeks ago.
The
Maine Water Conference.
The Maine Water Conference.
Yeah, there was a couple of really good speakers that had done. Let's see, I can't remember the name. I've got to say the program at the office, but they had done some research for watersheds on pollution and invasive plants and stuff like that. I don't know. Do you think we'd attract any of the summer folks to something like that?
Late enough in the spring when they're back.
I'm thinking like June or something is what I'm thinking.
Well, the summer people come June, July, don't
they? It seems to be hard to get people to come out to things like that.
Yeah, right. But if you bring in the balloons and then transition into this, people will come for a speaker on balloons, but if you can combine, we tried to do summer seminars, and the only real successful one we added in regarding Lake is when we did a balloon one. I mean, the last time we had to bring in all the chairs we could find, so we had well over 100. All the other seminars we've done the last couple of years, we'll get a handful, but if you have balloons there, and then maybe get into water quality, that stuff that might work
so that people can see the difference.
Well, if you want to do something like that, I'd be willing to work with you to help set it up.
Yeah, and the Fayette Day sounds like a good idea. Who would be the person to talk to about that?
There would be a couple of people, Jennifer Barrow, B-E-R-O, and
Teresa? Contact the school?
Call the school, and Teresa will be able to give you her number, 685-4770.
Do they send out a flyer about homes?
Typically, we just advertise it via our email, and they'll send a flyer through the kids.
Yeah. Because if there was some blurb, that we were going to be there, and we're really looking for love to talk to you type thing.
Yep.
Now, the thing that Mighty mentioned, too, that one of the aspects of our organization that we're just starting to get into, and that's around youth education. And that has a lot of promise you know, around, you know, going to the schools, doing projects for the schools, and getting the kids enthused about something. So that's a whole other piece of the program that we have not really delved into much. But some of the grants that we're applying for, hopefully, if we get one of those, it's going to provide some funding to allow us to do that. So, because as you bring those kids in, you can sometimes bring their parents in too, you know, and so that's an inroad that we're trying to make to at the kid level. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, if you have more ideas of recruiting, how to recruit volunteers and places where we can find them, let me know.
And we appreciate all the work and effort that you commit, Lighty, and as a staff of volunteers, everyone that is working hard and doing what they can, doing their best, as you said, Bill. One thing that I think we need to continue to work on is having that public dialogue, getting more people involved. Obviously, I'm very sorry we don't have a full complement here tonight for you, but this audio recording, this PowerPoint presentation will be getting out via the Facebook and the website as soon as you can put it out here.
Okay.
My suggestion would be if you get with the KVLT, Kennebec Valley Land Trust, people, when they have their different events at their different KLT sites, maybe setting up because you have people with the same mindset. Usually your KLT people are going to be the conservationist and environmentalists. You might be able to draw some folks off of setting up at one of their events. Like we have one, once a year at the Parker Headlands Nature Trail.
Right.
And you might be able to get people interested in that.
That's not a bad idea, lady. You hear that?
Yeah.
Perhaps. Because I know that they're having like a lecture series as well, KLT is. So perhaps that might be a good thing. We could get permission to piggyback with one of their events. That might be interesting. See, we have a KLT. We have a KLT member on our board as well. So you know,
We are involved with them, for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you all. I really appreciate you coming and spending your time with us.
And thank you for stay at support. It really makes a difference.
I wish
I could get the other thing, too. I want to mention, I don't want to leave you without mentioning it. Yet there are people out there that are not happy with what we're doing or have seen something they don't like what they're doing out there. We need to have that feedback. And believe me, I'll you know, call Lighty or leave a message. If I get it, I'm not going to come with defensive. I want to know that we're listening to people, what our perception is of doing the work with the kids and all that stuff that we're trying to do.
Clyde, I'm glad you mentioned that because one of the reasons why, you know, I said what I said about the promotional material and now we just received a letter from the auditor is that about a year ago was the first indication of some negative comments that I received regarding 30 Mile. And it had to do with understanding the organization, how it's run, how it's financially managed, and accountability. And you guys responded with what you have here, and it's incredible. You've done a remarkable job, and this should satisfy any of the negativity that I've heard.
Yeah, we're right open, wide open. We're just we're out there, and we'd like to be able to talk with these people and find out, you know, what is it, you know, is he troubling about what we're doing out there?
Right.
Do we improve it? That's what we're here for. And it's better than waiting to get ambushed, I'll tell you right now. I think the whole thing is better go get on and face it. I've been through this before, the line of work I did before for a good many years, and it was an open book. I didn't go hiding anywhere with it. Boy, you know, it goes a long way just meeting that person and talking over with them.
I'm on the board of the Belgrade Regional Conservation Alliance, and you know they're a member, and I shared this annual report with them, and they said, "Wow, you know, I can't believe that you're putting, you know, like that financial information out there like that, you know, openly." And I said, "Well, you know, we were criticized for not doing it, so our strategy now is we're just going to put it all right out there. We're not even thinking about that anymore." And so, you know, a lot of organizations don't do it quite as openly as that, that's for sure, but that's our strategy. We're just putting it right out there.
Well, you guys have done an excellent job, and Lenny, I would like to speak with you in terms of how you produce all this, because you guys do an excellent job. It's something I'd like to emulate at some point. But thank you very much. Appreciate the night.